It's time for Let's Talk with Brian Pettaway.
Good morning, happy Sunday, and welcome to Let's Talk. I am Brian Pettaway, your host for about an hour this Sunday morning from 10 until around 11 or so. And as you know, if you've been listening, we talk about basically everything on this show. And true to form, today we're going to talk about something that, besides our home, are typically our next biggest and most expensive investments, and that's our vehicles. You know, unless you have a lot of experience in purchasing a vehicle, walking into a car dealership can feel like you're walking into the lion's den sometimes. You know, it's an intimidating feeling. So today we're going to talk to somebody who can help relieve some of that tension and anxiety. He's going to tell you what kind of homework to do before you step into that dealership so that when you do walk in, salespeople will know that they're dealing with someone who knows what he or she is talking about so that you won't be taken advantage of. Now, the reason I'm doing this story today is for two reasons. A, I've heard a couple of horror stories recently where people have been taken to the cleaners completely. And the other is because conventional wisdom says that in the auto industry, the best time to buy a vehicle for the consumer is between October and January. Now, October is right around the corner, so I figure you can do your research today for what you might want to buy and then listen to the tips that my guest gives you today and apply them to when you walk into a dealership to purchase your vehicle. Also today, like every Sunday, we've got the Petty. He's going to talk about the upcoming NFL season, the training camps that are going on now, the trades, the injuries, all of that good stuff. Talk about those Orioles and where they are in the standings towards the tail end of the season. But first, I get to do one of the things that I like to do most, and that is to talk about what has gone on in the news this past week. So I hope you're feeling great, because I'm feeling great. I've got lots to talk about, so let's get right to it. Now, I've done a couple of stories over the past few weeks about the amount of cars that have been stolen in the Baltimore City and Baltimore County areas throughout the year. And I've mentioned in those stories that a few of the perpetrators of these car thefts have been under the age of 13. Well, this week an officer identified an 11-year-old car theft suspect who has already been picked up and released 17 times since May 31st. And because of his age, will probably never face any charges. Now remember, a lot of the cars that have been stolen are Kias and Hyundais, cars that are not stolen by professional car thieves, taken to a chop shop, or sold and transported overseas. These cars are being stolen by young kids who are just out for a joyride and have a good time, and they don't get rid of these cars until they either run out of gas or they crash them because, you know, they're not seasoned and experienced drivers. Baltimore City State's Attorney Ivan Bates says that the problem is the system. The laws are just not working. He said the kids steal these cars and will continue to steal these cars because they believe it's a game and they know that there are no consequences. He says that there's nothing the law will allow them to do to hold these kids accountable. The kids are doing whatever they want to do. He says, it's very frustrating. You have officers doing their jobs, risking their lives. You have victims who struggle to make the car payments, struggle to pay the insurance, doing what they can. And here comes a young kid, a child, stealing their car because they think it's a game. And despite calls to hold a special session to address the escalating violent crime issue, several notable Maryland lawmakers refused to support that call, including Senate President Bill Ferguson. Bates said that he has had conversations over the summer with lawmakers, including Ferguson and House Speaker Adrian Jones, about addressing the current juvenile crime crisis. Since those conversations, Bates said that he does feel that there are some members of the legislature that have heard the concerns of the public. But without a doubt, the laws need to change. I don't know what they can do with the law to an 11-year-old. We're talking about an 11-year-old. But he's been released already 17 times prior to this to his mom. And I guess I'm wondering, is what is her responsibility in all of this? What does she have to say? Where is she at 3 and 4 in the morning when her 11-year-old is out running amok? I mean, I would be very curious to hear what the parent of this 11-year-old would have to say. And if starting to hold parents accountable for these children's actions would actually make any difference. Also in the local news on Wednesday, U.S. District Judge Richard D. Bennett sentenced 49-year-old Benjamin Lawton of Glen Burnie to 19 years in federal prison, followed by 25 years of supervised release for sex trafficking by force, fraud, and coercion in connection with his trafficking and or transportation of 8 women to work for him in his prostitution ring. According to his plea agreement beginning in at least 2020, Lawton recruited, enticed, transported, advertised, and solicited at least 8 victims by force or coercion into engaging in commercial sex acts. As detailed in the plea agreement, Lawton's victims were expected to pay all of the money they made from commercial sex acts, and Lawton threatened them with physical harm if they did not follow the rules. For example, Lawton met victim 1 through a female friend in March of 2021. Eventually, he explained to Victim 1 that she belonged to him, and he took photos for commercial sex ads for both Victim 1 and her friend, and taught Victim 1 how to engage in commercial sex acts. Lawson also talked with them and taught them the text codes and rules. When Victim 1 did not use the correct text code after one of the dates, Lawton slapped her so hard that her eardrum burst. Lawton put Victim 1 into hotels near BWI Airport, around Washington, D.C., and in Northern Virginia, where she engaged in commercial sex. The Lawton case was investigated by law enforcement agencies that are members of the Maryland Human Trafficking Task Force, formed in 2007. Members include federal, state, and local law officials, as well as victim service providers and local community members. For more information about the Maryland Human Trafficking Task Force, please visit www.marylandhumantrafficking.org. And in international news, the Food and Drug Administration has approved the Alzheimer's drug Leqembi, marking the first time a drug meant to slow the progression of the disease has been granted full regulatory approval. Other approved drugs for Alzheimer's only target the symptoms, but Phase 3 clinical trial shows that the disease was slowed down by this drug by 27% over an 18-month period, which means in real-world terms, this likely means more time for the patient to be living independently, enjoying their hobbies, their friends, and having a better quality of life. And that is nothing but good news. And of course, last but not least, former President Donald Trump was booked at the Fulton County Jail Thursday night on state charges that he conspired to overrun the results of the 2020 presidential election in Georgia. Trump was fingerprinted, and a booking photo commonly known as a mugshot was taken of the former president and then later released to the public. Trump is facing charges in four separate criminal cases, but this is the first time he had ever taken a mugshot. Trump is facing 13 separate counts in Georgia, including a racketeering charge and several fraud charges. And although Trump claims to be a billionaire, he has not offered to contribute at all to the legal defense cost of the people charged alongside him in this Georgia case. Well, of course he won't, because at the end of the day, we all know that Trump is concerned with one person, and that is Trump. Well, it's about time to shift gears and start talking to my guest today about today's topic, and we will do that as soon as we come back.
Sean E. Merriman presents An Evening with Kiki Wyatt.
We'll be loving to the brink of the
with her special guest, Keith Washington. And the sultry Miss Crystal F. Saturday, September 23rd, 6 p.m. at the James Weldon Auditorium at Coppin State University. Get your tickets at SeanEMerriman.com. This is a Ticketmaster event.
All right, we are back, and it is time, like I said earlier, to shift gears. And no pun intended, we are going to be talking about vehicles today. And one of the big reasons I wanted to talk about vehicles is because it's that time of the year we start buying them. It's the best time of the year, according to the automotive industry, to purchase your new car, because this is when they can extend and offer the best rebates from October to January. It is not during the spring. It is not during the summer. It is really in the fall. So I wanted to actually have a little bit of a class today on what to expect, on what to do, what not to do when walking into a car dealership and trading either in your car or just buying something fresh off the lot without a trade-in. And I got somebody who I trust, who I know is in the business, who does an amazing job in mentoring and helping people purchase cars. And that is my cousin Linsberg. Now, he's out in Detroit, but he's going to be talking to me today and telling us exactly what to look for. So without further ado, please help me welcome to the show new car sales manager and mentor and advisor to new car sales purchasers, Linsberg Petway. All right, good morning, Linsberg. Morning, cuz. How you feeling this morning?
Good morning. I'm doing great. How you feel?
Hey, man, I'm trying to be all I can be. I appreciate you being here. I know the Sunday in particular is a family day for you, a day you give to the Lord, so I appreciate you being here with me this morning.
No doubt. Appreciate you.
Hey, listen, I wanted to have you here because, you know, conventional wisdom says that buying a car is best done between the months of October and January, and we're right up on that. And I had a couple of friends get really, really taken a couple of weeks ago buying a car, and it made me realize how intimidating that process can be. So I just wanted to have somebody here that can help me through this process and teach my listeners a couple of things. So you ready to roll with me on that?
Yes, sir. Let's do it.
Okay. Now, before I get into the whole car buying thing, I always ask my guests that I have on this question, and you in particular, because you didn't start off in the car business. What got you in the car business?
For lack of a better word, God's plan. I was formerly an educator in education for 18 years. I moved up from the gym to the principal's office. Okay. And I had the opportunity to lead the students of Detroit. And at a certain sudden turn, the school where I was at closed. And then I went to DPS, Detroit Public School System, and another opportunity shut the door there. So I was unemployed for about 8 months. And someone presented this to me, and I hadn't ever thought about selling cars. Wow. But I was in a place of desperation and needed to be in a job, be employed, and I took it up. And I truly believe God placed me here to be a consumer advocate, if we can say that.
Absolutely. And you are definitely one of those. And that's what I wanted to say. I mean, you weren't just like a substitute teacher somewhere. You were deep in the profession of educating. In fact, you got an award for your academic excellence as an educator. So you've got to miss that aspect of working with kids to some degree.
Yes, I do. I do miss the children, the aspect of educating children, motivating children. To this day, I just had a student last week come see me. They were 33 now, and they came to purchase the car from me. Okay. And I taught that kid when they were in elementary school. So I got an education initially because I didn't see anybody like me in the administrative position or in the teacher position. So as a Black man, my father died when I was 2. So a lot of my mentors and people who influenced me were my football coaches. Right. So when I had the opportunity to navigate through college and when I graduated, I said I wanted to come back to the city of Detroit and be a pillar for some young people.
Well, being a pillar, being an educator and a mentor to so many people for so long and having your integrity intact and being known for being an integrity-filled person, how did you deal with the stigma of being a salesperson and what that title means to a lot of people as far as the integrity aspect of it?
Well, I embraced it. I took it head on, and I did that by being totally transparent and respectful with my clients. Everybody that sat on the other desk or the other side of that desk, I wanted them to be treated as if I was sitting in that. So I treated everyone as myself. I made sure they understood. Having the background of education gave me an opportunity to, for lack of a better word, teach or explain things differently. Because you have a lot of different learners in a classroom. There's some visual learners. There are some people who could just hear something. So I just made sure my clients understood the process. And as we went through that, the conversations, they began to, for lack of a better word, melt and become more comfortable.
Okay.
And once they took their guard down at the end of the conversation or the end of the actual sale, I had a client rather than a customer.
Okay. Now you're in a tough city. You know, a lot of the plants used to be in Detroit. But they're no longer there. Or are they coming back? I hear different things about the auto industry in Detroit. But I know that as far as selling cars, the economy isn't always the greatest in Detroit. Does it make it a tough place to sell?
Right now, it's quite challenging. I say that because post-pandemic, there has been a change in the way the manufacturers build the cars and send the cars. At one point in time, we used to have almost a stockpile of 100 to 150 cars on our campus, and you could just walk back there and say, hey, I want that one or that one. Now we're selling paper. We're selling invoices before the cars come in, and that takes another level of trust between client and salesperson because they're buying something they haven't seen. There has to be a level of integrity with the numbers so they don't change when the car comes in. There has to be a true explanation of when this car might come in because not only do we have the issue of lack of cars, but there are lack of drivers to bring the cars to us. So the supply chain and dynamic has been affected as well. So it's a little challenging now.
How long have you been in the business now?
This is my 6th year. I started off in 2017, first month in the business. I sold 16 cars, and that was pretty unheard of, just fresh. And then from there, I averaged 20 cars a month. And June 2020, I became a floor manager I fell Monsieur Verlaine Levant.
So that's your title now. You're an actual sales manager there now, right?
Yes, actual sales manager. I have a team of six people up under me, and I kind of run my team a certain way. I do a lot of marketing. I do a lot of advertising, a lot of branding to bring clients in addition to what my actual dealership supplies.
Right. So that's another question I have you. What is For Real? What is that all about?
For Real is a lifestyle. I mean, I've been For Real since college. For Real actually means forgetting what's behind you, realizing who you're created to be, entering into your destiny, always moving forward and learning from the lessons of life. So that's my mantra. That's who I am. I have a tattoo of that on my arm. And when I got into the automotive business, whatever I've done, I've been for real about it.
Okay.
And so when I got into the automotive business, I just transitioned that portion of the name to automotive. So I work with Feldman, up under Feldman Automotive, which is a large automotive group here in the Metro Detroit area, and we have dealerships in Ohio. But I branded myself, so I have like my own dealership within a dealership. So I have my own website, I do my own marketing. I use my circle of influence through my parents, students, large community in church, in my church, to bring clients in. And okay. From that has led to clients referring me. So I average over 650 cars a year.
Oh, wow.
In sales, yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right, so listen, I got some questions for you, mostly from listeners. So sure. I'm going to run past you. One of the biggest questions is it true that still in 2023, are women still a target when they walk through the doors by themselves?
Honestly, I'm going to keep it for real. Unfortunately, yes.
Okay.
And I say that with all due respect. When you say target, it's not like we're hunters. But in any instance, a person is always trying to make profit. I'll use that statement. And right. If you have the opportunity to make profit on a person who is naive and not savvy enough or educated enough to know the ins and outs of the industry, then you will, be it a woman or a man. Unfortunately, more women have less knowledge concerning automotive purchasing.
Right. So do you suggest that they walk in the doors with a man? And if not, what can a woman do to prepare herself walking through the door?
I chuckle because we did a TikTok about that. A young lady was sitting across from me and it was a joke. I was like, well, where's your husband? Where's your dad? Where's your uncle? But yes, that would help. But I have four sisters, and growing up with four sisters, I saw them being very independent. And fortunately, this is just a backdrop. One of my sisters was in the industry for 30 years. She was a general sales manager. So empowering yourself before you go in, I think, is the most effective way. Doing some research, simple things, finding out what car you want, finding out the features of the car, finding out the gas mileage of the car, looking up what rebates are offered, going in with a guesstimation of what your trade value is, having some sense of the quote-unquote automotive lingo. Well, what is my interest rate? What are my terms? And when you communicate that to the salesperson across from you, they don't know you, but when you communicate it confidently, then we have educated buyers, so let's stay focused.
Right.
Unfortunately, how it goes. Like all businesses are in the business to make a profit, and automotive sales is one of those businesses where you can make a large profit, and that's what the goal is. However, when you come in, if you come in equipped, educated, knowing what you want. And I'll say about 70% of my clients already do with the internet.
Right.
And they are ready to purchase. They know what they want. They know how much they want to put down. So it's in over the last, I'll say, 3.5 years, there's been a shift with COVID. More people are at home on their computers.
Right.
So now when they walk in, they're more knowledgeable.
Has that made your job tougher?
No, it actually makes it easier.
Really?
Because it's, yeah, if you're prepared, if you know what you want, If you know the color, you know the choices, you know the interest rate, you know your credit score, that makes that process go from 2.5 hours to maybe 1.5 hours or 90 minutes.
Okay.
I love an educated buyer. Most people don't, for the reasons that we stated earlier.
Right.
But me personally, like when my clients call in, I try to gather as much information before they come in. I try to gather their credit score, get that pulled, get their numbers. So when you sit in front of me, you're looking at the numbers, you're taking a test drive. And I understand your time is valuable, and that's what I teach my team. Your client's time is valuable, so do as much as you can prior to get them in and out and let them understand that you care about them, you care about their money, and you want them to refer their family and friends to you. So it's always trying to win more business.
If I have a car that I want to trade in, how do I determine what that trade-in value is? What's the best way to do that? And how do I determine if it's better to trade it in or to sell it privately?
Well, I'll say this, depending on the actual vehicle, you do the research and see how many are in your area. And you could do that by putting your VIN number in Kelly Blue Book or the Black Book value, or what's my trade worth.
Okay.
And if it's a specialty vehicle like a sports car or a large SUV, then trading it into the dealership might be the best option. Other than that, you always will get more money selling it hand to hand, simply because when you trade a vehicle in, there's a certain amount of money that the dealership has to put on top of what they give you for the used car mechanic, for the detail, if you need brakes, if we got to do some cosmetic work.
Right.
So that price is always between, I'll say, $1,900 to $2,900 that they have to put on top of that to get their car ready for the pre-owned lot. So when you look at the pricing of selling it hand to hand, then that's your profit, that's your margin or profit difference between trading it in and selling it from hand to hand. So basically, I would just always try to do some research. There's new companies out here, Vroom and AutoNation and Carvana, who need those type of pre-owned cars. So they're a little more aggressive than a dealership because they don't have lease turn-ins or
right.
People coming in, leasing a car, turning a car in. So they need pre-owned vehicles. So they might be a little higher than the actual dealership. But depending on what you're buying, we're pretty flexible. We're a large automotive group. So we have 13 dealerships within our group. So all of our stores have access. So that's another trick. If you're going to trade it in, try to trade it into a large automotive group so that car could be optioned to multiple buyers. And if that's the case, then that automotive group probably can give you a little more money because they want to sell the car
right.
that they have right. to get you out of the car that you're in.
What is the advantage of leasing a vehicle as opposed to buying a vehicle?
One of the main advantages, I would think, is the carefree, maintenance-free, to a certain extent, driving. If you do a 3-year, 36,000-mile lease, you just have to worry about your oil changes and your tire rotations. And normally, when you do the lease, those are included. With the technology now, you're always getting updates when you need to come in and get that done. The disadvantage, you didn't ask, but one of the disadvantages would be if you drive a lot.
Right.
And go over the miles, then it's going to cost you. Another advantage is you're always in the latest vehicle.
Right.
My wife, I lease her vehicles every 3 years. This last one, I did a 2-year lease just simply because of the market. I didn't want to extend myself for 3 years. I only did two just to see how the market shifts. But it's a good way to stay in the latest vehicle, have the latest technology, and kind of just drive worry-free.
Okay. Second chance credit people, I mean, they get hit over the head hard when it comes to interest
yes.
rates and sometimes even the quality of service. So what would you say a person who's in the 500 or 600 credit range, what kind of interest rates should they expect? What should they not exceed?
Depending on how that person paid their previous auto loans or if they had an auto loan.
Right.
In those subprime markets, I've seen 12 to 13% all the way up to 25%.
Ooh. 25%.
25%. And you know, the state maximum here in Michigan is 25. And I've had some clients this week who had to accept that 25%. Either you're going to accept it or you find a cosign. And it's just simply what the lenders are offering because of the high risk.
Right.
It's very unfortunate that a person in that situation has to pay more, but that's the reason why people have to understand and respect your credit.
I've always heard, and I kind of practice this, like I stopped buying brand new cars a while ago. I buy slightly used cars or newsed cars, as they're called. Is that a good thing to do? I mean, because of the depreciation value of new cars, or do you just, it doesn't really make a difference at this point?
That's a two-part answer. I'm going to say normally, and in most instances, you're going to save money because you're not paying what the MSRP is. Now, the caveat to that is MSRP is a certain amount. However, the automotive companies have discounts for family, friends, and employees. So that reduces the cost of the vehicle. Then there are rebates. So the MSRP on hypothetically a Tahoe might be $72,000. But after discounts and rebates, it's down to $59,000. A person pays that amount, they drive it, they trade it in. The market value is calling used $60,000. So essentially, you're paying the same amount that the person paid brand new, and you're paying for that with 30,000 miles on it, 23,000 miles. So it just depends. Yes, it's saving that person money because they're looking at the MSRP and say, well, I'm not paying $72,000, but that's not really what that person paid. So if you have access or know someone or have a family member that can get you the discount, I would suggest going new and reducing it down. But if you're not in that position right now, I'll use this for example. Brand new Equinox is about 31,000 MSRP. Pre-owned with about 13,000 miles, it's about 26. So there's a slight difference.
Right.
But if you got the discount and the rebates,
it's about the same. Right.
So that's why you it pays to be an educated buyer, do some research.
I saw one of your TikToks where you were sitting in a brand new Corvette and someone presented you a young man who had just started a business and wanted to buy the Corvette, could afford it monthly and had cash, a lot of cash to put down on it. You know what TikTok I'm talking about, right?
Yes, sir.
And you kind of steered him away from that and told him to, I guess, take that down payment and put it in an interest-bearing account and then come back later. What was the purpose of that?
The purpose of that was to let people know that just because you can, you don't have to. And when you can, when you really can, then you should. He had a job. The scenario was that he had a job that could pay for that based upon how much he was making. However, emergency happens, situation happens, and you know, all of that can change. So my goal was to say, I think that was when we were talking about streams of income.
Right.
When you have multiple streams of income, then you should be able to, then that's when I suggest you start buying toys. Because if you have a Corvette, you're still gonna need a second car. You know, because that's a seasonal car, unless you live in Vegas or, you know, Miami, somewhere like that. But you're going to need a second car. So when people buy those sports cars, those toys, I always suggest you should have a stream of income to help pay for it, or if not pay for that particular toy. So it was just a lesson, you know, for the younger people. I always like to kind of throw those little mentor sessions in, meaning just because you can, you don't have to, and always try to get streams of income.
When you have young people come in and they come in with their parents, do you, because they don't have credit established, do you recommend the parents co-sign for them, or do you recommend that the kids just pay the higher interest rate and go on their own?
I recommend that the parents co-sign for them.
Okay.
I actually have had some younger, when I say younger, 16, 17 year olds who have gotten cars and their parents have had the opportunity to put them as a authorized user on some of their credit cards and co-sign for them. So then when they turn 18, 19, 20, their credit score is normally in the 700s because they have access to those accounts. They're just an authorized user, but they're still on there. And then they have a paid auto, which was a lease.
Right.
And you know what? I see that more in other races.
Right.
I'm going to be quite honest. I don't see that too much in the African-American race, in our own race. That's why when I always try to be an advocate and give people the best information so they can make the best choices. I get very frustrated when I have someone that looks like me sitting across from me hoping to get approved rather than telling me this is what they want and this is what they're going to pay because they're in a position to.
Right. And, you know, and I hate to break everything down by race, but there is a difference in this country when it comes to interest rates, when it comes to knowing what your credit score is or what your credit score actually is. And I guess my question for you is when you have someone that comes in with a poor credit score, but they want more, because that's how we do sometimes. We want more than what our credit score will allow. How do you explain to them to be disciplined for a couple of years and then come back and get what your credit score will allow you to get?
Well, I show them the credit. I show them the actual score. I show them their report. Most times there's something in collections. So I show them you need to pay these things, take care of these things. Once they come off your credit report, 60 to 90 days, then your score should go up. I kind of walk them through the process. I let them know that this particular car is a process car. This car is the process to get you to where you want to be. And I always, and God has blessed me to always find something that they like. It's not what they came in for, but they can see themselves in it. You know, it's not the color, but it's kind of close to what they wanted. So they can see themselves making that higher payment monthly. And I have partnered with a local credit union up here in Detroit who has a cut my rate in half program in which they refinance auto loans, not based upon credit score, but based upon employment.
Okay.
So that helps as well. And then, just being transparent and look and just showing them like, and most times they don't know or they haven't seen that or heard anyone kind of explain it that way. I'm not a credit repair specialist. I never, try to present myself as one. I just tell them based upon my experience, my knowledge, being in the industry and physically going through it myself, with credit, with bankruptcies and different things like that, and they listen.
You said earlier that at this point, right now, because of the lack of inventory, that people are actually buying paper as opposed to having their hands on the car when they walk in the dealership to purchase it, right?
Yes, sir.
What kind of waiting period is going on for vehicles right now? If I were to walk in your dealership and I wanted, I don't know, a Malibu or an Impala, how long could I expect to wait to get that vehicle?
Well, it depends on the vehicle. We have some vehicles coming from Korea. We have some vehicles coming from Mexico. We have some vehicles coming from China. The most popular vehicle now is the redesigned, remodeled Chevrolet Trax. And that is an average of 6 week, 8 week wait.
Ooh.
Yes. Because it takes a little time to travel over the water. Tahoes and Suburbans, maybe a 3 to 4 week wait. So, you know, but we allow the person to stay in their car until their car comes in so they have something to drive. Or if we have to take them out of it, depending on the situation, this is not always, but we give the person a pre-owned vehicle to drive. We just always try to extend ourselves to win that client, to let them know we're different than the dealership up the street, because, you know, we don't not only compete against other dealers, but within the dealership, you know, you can go sit at that desk or this desk or my desk. So we always try to, when I say we, my team, we always try to extend ourselves. But the average is about 6 to 8 weeks for a brand new vehicle.
What about electric cars? Are you finding that electric cars are actually saving the money that people are hoping that it saves them, or is it kind of a wash?
That's a good question, and there's not enough data for me to answer that now. I say that because we have had a couple of delays with our EVs. We have a new design EV, EVU. Then we have the Blazer that's coming out. We have the Silverado. But they keep getting pushed back. The ones that I have sold this year, probably I'll say two. The people that I see when they come up, or I see them at the gym, they're very pleased with the car, you know, with the ability to hold a charge for 220, 290 miles.
Right.
So they're very pleased with it. The bigger vehicles that are coming out now, they're holding longer charges for more miles. And I think that's the biggest piece that people want to be sure that they not going to just be on the road and it just dies out.
Right. Now, the maintenance on those vehicles, I understand, are substantially less than they are on gasoline vehicles. Is that true?
Yes, because you're not doing the oil changes as much. You don't have the different dynamics that you would have with a gas engine. So you're basically bringing your car in for tire rotations. But like I said, it's not enough data out for us to really answer that, because if something does go wrong with that battery, then that's going to be a major cost.
Right, you know? And that's what I meant by that. Those batteries, are they're no joke. Sometimes the batteries are $4,000 or $5,000. Exactly. When you have clients that come in and they see a car that they want, or that they've seen online that they want, and it's at another dealership, do you have to pay a dealership to get that car to you? And then do you tack that on to the cost of the actual vehicle for the client?
No, if it's within our brand, you don't. We just do a dealer trade. Over the last 2 years, things have been a little challenging as far as getting dealers outside of our automotive group. And that's why I say, if you're going to try to buy from a large automotive group, because that gives you an advantage, because we have an advantage of having several dealerships. So we have 5 Chevy stores. So if something is not in our inventory, we can call one of our sister stores and do a trade internally. Now, if it's at another dealer under another name, and that's a standalone dealership, they're not inclined to trade with us as quickly, because they need their inventory. There's a certain floor plan they have to pay internally with GM or, you know, whatever their manufacturer company is. But if it's a large automotive group, it's easier to trade within that group. But there's no fee tacked on. It's just because you're normally looking at inventory. Okay, you have an Equinox I want. What do you want from me? Okay, well, you have a Silverado I want. Okay, let's make the trade. That used to work. Now it's Equinox for Equinox. You know, whatever I give you, I got to get the same thing back because of lack of inventory.
I know that one of the scariest things, and actually one of the most expensive departments in the car dealership, is the finance department. When you go back after you purchase a vehicle and they're hitting you with this package and that warranty, and what should consumers do to educate themselves before meeting the finance manager or the finance officer?
Well, before you come to the dealership, you have to kind of give yourself a price range in which you're willing to pay.
Okay.
And hypothetically say, okay, this is my range. I'm going to do $500 a month for this vehicle, but I'm going to allow me another $15 to $45 for coverage, because anything you add, you're going to have to pay for. And then you have to look at, what do I need? Okay. Here in Michigan, we have a lot of potholes.
Okay.
So tire and wheel is like a necessity. I mean, I put it on all my vehicles. And sure enough, my son went out, he hit a pothole, bust a tire. We got it towed up to the dealership. They changed the tire. He was right on his way. Okay. So you have to find out what you need. If you're going to keep the vehicle past the manufacturer warranty, then you need some coverage after that, because it's a man-made thing. So it might break down. And when it does, do you want to pay the $1,300 or do you want to pay a $100 deductible? So you just have to say, well, you know, I'll just pay the $1,300, pay out my pocket when it comes, and don't add the extra $15 to $30 a month on my monthly bill. People get intimidated. Sometimes they say, I don't want to see none of that. But
right.
you need to see what you don't want. Because when something happens, and I have clients call me, hey, Linsberg, I'm here at this dealership, and I know I got a warranty, didn't I? And I pull it up. No, it looks like you denied that. I did? Yeah. And it's, you know, they'll show you. It's a breakdown per day.
Right.
If you add this, it's going to add 25 cents per day, which is a total of such and such to your monthly bill. So just do the education, understand how long you're going to keep the vehicle, look up the different type of warranties, what the deductibles are. And I always say, give yourself an extra $15 to $30 a leg room on top of what you're going to pay to be covered. Now, if it's a lease, 3 years, $36,000, you're covered bumper to bumper. But I always, with those leases, I still suggest tire and wheel, especially if you have a Tahoe, if you have, you know, expensive 20 inches, 22 inch wheels, nice rims, because if it's damaged, you can't drive it, and you have to pay for it because you have to, you know, get it fixed before you turn it in.
This is going to sound crazy, man, but I remember watching a Cosby Show once, and Bill and Theo were going to go purchase a car, right? Mm-hmm. And Bill Cosby, he dressed way down before he went to the dealership.
Right, right.
And
right.
When they got there, Theo mentioned that he was a doctor, and the salesman's eyes lit up. Is there anything that the buyers should do to protect themselves from that, you know, from that, that prejudice when they walk into a dealership?
I did a TikTok, and this is the one that kind of put me out there. It got like 2.8 million views. And it was me standing, and a young black male walked in. He actually works with me. He's my nephew. And I kind of read him what I thought who he was.
Right.
And come to find out, you know, we put in a disclaimer. He was educated. He had 700 credit score. Blah, 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 blah. So do people get judged when they walk in? They do. Can you defend yourself? Certain ways you can, if you want to play the game. I say just be who you are. Once you sit down and open your mouth and then you educated, you did your research, then that's the best defusing that you could ever do. I know people come in and do that. They dress down to see how people are going to treat them.
Right.
I picked my team, so they have the same mindset that I have, but we treat everyone with respect. We treat everyone with the same level of integrity and care. If you're buying a $150,000 Corvette or if you're buying a $5,000 beater, you're still going to get a thank you card from me. You're still going to get an email. You're still going to get a Christmas card, because your money is more important to you than it is to me, but I value your money coming to our dealership. So I guess the best way is just, like I said, be educated. If you want to go in there with a suit, shirt, and tie, and with a briefcase, and you don't know what you're talking about, they still gonna clobber you.
Right.
Right.
No doubt about it. Mm-hmm. Do you find that people gravitate as a black person more to a black person, and a white person more to a white person as a salespeople, or is it really just across the board at this point?
Wow, because you opened up canned worms. Digging deep, going Anthony Anderson. I'll say this, and one thing about me, I keep it real. I'm located in a certain city,
okay,
which was known for to be
just a little
biased.
Chris.
Okay, and I experienced some of that,
okay,
where I was told directly I don't need anything from you.
Okay.
And then when someone else walked up to them that looked like them, they were friendly and they worked with them. Then I've seen people who look like me prefer to work with someone who doesn't look like them. So I don't know. You know, here lately, I do find a lot of clients who walk in and their verbiage, if they happen to get an African-American salesperson, once you sit down and talk to them, I wanted someone that looked like me.
Okay.
That's been said more than a little. And but if someone else, I believe, that didn't look like them came up, took them through the process, they would be happy. I mean, we have all type of nationalities in our dealership, and everyone is successful with all races. But you have a certain group of people who just want to work with people who look like them. There's a comfort level, or they want to support you. That's what they say. I want to support my own.
Right.
You know, I want to make sure your family's taken care of. And that's the mentality I think we should go back to a certain degree.
Okay.
To build community wealth and generation wealth and help each other get to the next level. You know, buy black, as they say, or, you know, for us.
Right.
I mean, that's all I can speak to.
Right. But at the end of the day, you can only do what you can do based on what their credit score is and how much money they have anyway, right?
Exactly right. At the end of the day, you need some credit.
Exactly.
Some money.
So how can people get a hold of you? Because I know you're in Detroit. How can they get a hold of you? How can you help them if they're not in that area? Because you guys ship cars. I mean, it's not like you have to be there to get it. So how?
No.
So how can they get a hold of you?
Well, you can reach me at www.forrealautomotive.com. That's the website. My telephone number is 313-995-2025. Or you can look me up on TikTok, Big Lensburg, Lensburg For Real, Facebook, Lensburg For Real, For Real Automotive. Just put in For Real and I'll pop up.
Yeah, because I want people to see your videos. They are kind of crazy sometimes, so I want them to check them out. And see how for real you really are. You really are.
Yes.
While I have you here today, because they really tell the story, because they're pretty funny sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, but listen, cuz, I appreciate you being on. And you know, people hear me calling you cuz, you know, you're all on the family tree. You know,
yes.
People don't realize that the Petaway name was spelled many different ways once we left
many
the plantation.
Yes.
But we're all in the same bloodline and the same family tree. So I appreciate you being here as fam today.
I appreciate you. Yeah, and like I said, if you look me up, I'll take care of you. I had a young lady fly in from Tennessee yesterday, pick her vehicle up. Has a young lady come in from Texas. I sold Corvettes, Mississippi. If I need to ship it, we can get it to you. If you have questions or just want some advice, you can look me up as well.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you, brother. You enjoy your Sunday, all right?
All right, you have a good one.
You too, man. Thank you so much.
All right, peace.
All right, I'm so thankful for my cuz Lindbergh for coming on today. I hope you learned as much about buying a car today as I did about getting as much for your trade-in value as you possibly can. Maybe it won't be as intimidating as it was before the show, walking into a car dealership and trying to get as much buying for your buck. All right, but I know you hear the music though, and that can only mean one thing on this show, and that means it is time for the Petty. So let's give the Petty a call like we do every week and see what he's talking about today.
Good morning, Brother B. How are you?
I'm good, sir. How are you this morning, Petty? How you doing?
Man, I'm doing just great.
Awesome.
Happy Sunday to you. I'm going to get this thing started right away because I have some stuff for you. And first of all, I'm not a big college football fan. I do watch college football.
Right.
But so many teams, so many divisions, it's hard to keep up with them. And when you talk about the top 25, there are teams outside of the FBC that's, or FBS, or whatever they call it, that you know, should be there. And they only based the national championship on the top 25. I think that's so unfair.
Right, right.
But for all you college football fans, this is your time of year because the college football season has started.
Yeah, I've got a friend down in Oklahoma, man, Anthony Fingers. He's my dude, man, and he is locked into all of the SEC scoring and teams and all of that. He's a huge SEC fan. So, yeah, you definitely have to be kind of an expert in one conference or the other when it comes to college football.
Exactly, and I'm definitely not. I mean, I watch a little college football. And when you talk about the SEC, you're talking basically about another division in the NFL. Those schools are super powerhouse.
Yeah, they are.
You know, we talk about Florida, Alabama, Georgia, LSU. I mean, man, some of those teams could be some NFL teams.
Definitely.
And that's just the reality of it. As a matter of fact, they call in the Eagles Philadelphia Bulldogs instead of the Philadelphia Eagles players. I mean, Georgia players on
right,
that team.
Right.
So, I mean, let me get to this thing. And I'm going to start a little bit in reverse. I usually would save this for last. But I'm going to do this one first because I know you are a fan of boxing.
I am.
And that fight that's coming up is going to be a barn burner. But, you know, it's a little strange because Jermell Charlo, he's stepping up two weight classes to face Canelo Alvarez. And I'm like, man, that's kind of weird.
It's a mistake.
No, dude, it's a mistake, stay in your lane. And I didn't know this, but he's stepping in for his twin brother who is having some personal problems and is not going to be able to fight.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, see, that's a little snippet that came out. And he's an undisputed champion in his division. And, of course, Alvarez is a champion, and they're going to clash. But I really think that's a mistake. I like the young man, but I think he should stay in his lane.
Yeah, it's a mistake. He's not used to getting hit with the kind of power Canelo's going to come with, first of all. And the speed that he had, two weight classes lower than what he's going up to, is going to be diminished because he's going to be carrying so much more weight that he's not used to carrying in the ring. So it's definitely a mistake.
It's definitely a mistake, brother B. And in another news in boxing, Anthony Joshua, who was once the undisputed heavyweight champion, he had a fight last weekend, and he took on some bum by the name of Robert Hellenius. And he knocked him out in the seventh round.
Yeah.
And everybody's saying he's back.
No.
Well, guess what? Dante Wilder fought that same guy, knocked him out in the first round with one punch.
Right.
And if you can recall, Wilder and Joshua were supposed to meet when they were both heavyweight champions and it never came to fruition. And then there's talks again that they're trying to fight. And I don't think Anthony Joshua's ready for Dante Wilder. Even though he has lost twice to Tyson Fury, he's definitely not ready for Anthony Joshua. I mean, well, Anthony Joshua's not ready for Dante Wilder. He's not. He's not ready for him.
No,
destroy him.
I'm not a huge Dante Wilder fan. I think he's fighting in an era where it's easy to be a heavyweight champion as opposed to, you know, the area in which we grew up. You had the Holyfields and you had the Tysons and you had all of these cats that were huge, huge, you know, skilled heavyweights. You know, Dante Wilder is a one-punch guy, and he doesn't absorb punches well.
So, well, he's a wild brawler.
Right.
I can't even say he's a fighter. I definitely can't say he's a boxer. To me, he's just a wild brawler. And if he catches you with that right hand, it's lights out.
Yeah, but he got to catch you with it. And he's sometimes, you know, he'll, for example, he and Lennox Lewis are the same height. Lennox Lewis would have, come on, man. Lennox Lewis would have killed that cat.
Lennox Lewis was a boxer. Dante Wilder is a brawler. And like I said, it's very unorthodox. I watched some of his fights. I watched a lot of his fights. And the way he destroys guys, it's like, he's got power. The dude, he doesn't look that big. Don't like he's a power puncher, but he's got power. As you recall, the first fight with him and Tyson Fury, he did knock Fury down.
Oh, he
Fury
did.
He just got up.
He did. He did, but
he's definitely a puncher.
He's just too light, man. He's too light in the legs. He's just too light.
Yeah, he definitely is. You know, you would not think he was a heavyweight, but he is. He's got a powerful punch. He catches you with it. His lights out. Now, let's go to what I like. And you know it's that time of year. It's coming up pretty soon. Brother B, you know I'm so excited. I'm so excited. I'm a little disappointed, a little sad because I have some news that's coming up about why I'm disappointed and sad. Let me start breaking down the NFC.
Okay.
And I'm going to start with the NFC North. Now, we saw the Vikings just about destroy everybody in the NFC North last year. And they were the top team in the NFC North. I expect them to do the same thing this year. I'm looking at the NFC North, and, you know, I do like those pesky Lions. I'm not going to count them out, but I just think Minnesota right now has better coaching, better players. You know, they got that wide receiver, Justin Jefferson. That's just, I mean, he's
a beast. He's a beast.
He's a beast. You know, without Aaron Rodgers, Green Bay is just a bunch of mother cheeseheads. So I'm expecting them to pull up third. And I'm kind of looking at the Bears as a rebuilding team. So I'm thinking they're going to be the bottom of the division. So look for Minnesota to win that division. Going into the NFC South, I honestly believe that it's wide open. But my favorite would have to be the Saints. Derek Carr is out there, and Michael Thomas is back, and, you know, they have a pretty decent defense. You know, I look at the other teams, the Panthers, the Buccaneers, and the Falcons. I just don't see anyone better than the Saints in that division. Right. And I'm thinking it'll be the Saints, the Panthers, the Buccaneers without Brady, and that pastry chef at the helm, Baker Mayfield. The Buccaneers come in third, and because Atlanta is taking a chance on a rookie quarterback, I'm thinking they may finish last. So look for the Saints to win that wide open division.
Okay.
Next, I want to go to the division that I kind of like the best because it's those guys from the West. And I'm talking about, you know what? The NFC West is intriguing to me this year because there's a lot of talent out there. And I'm not going to go out on a limb and say that the 49ers are going to win the division because I think Seattle could win that division.
What?
Geno Smith looked really good. Yes, I said it. I'm thinking about those sea chickens. They could possibly win the division. Geno Smith looked really good last year. And if he can continue to do what he did, and, you know, even I don't like this guy as a coach. I don't like Pete Carroll. I put him right up there with Belichick. I don't like either one of those coaches. But he has a way to make his team win. I think he's a very good coach. I think he's done a wonderful job with Geno Smith out there last year. And I'm looking forward to Seattle possibly win that division.
I mean,
the 49ers might be pulling up second. And the reason why I say because the 49ers are going to start Brock Purdy. They've named him their starter. The young man looked really, really good stepping in last year. His only loss was in the NFC Championship game. And he's going to be coming off that Tommy John surgery. He's looking pretty good in preseason. Well, in the training camps, and he played one preseason game. And so they're going with Brock Purdy this year. And with that being said, the big shock is that they traded Trey Lance to the Cowboys.
Yeah, they did. I saw that this morning, actually.
And you have to talk about what the 49ers gave up to get him and what they're getting in return. I mean, they did own up and say, we made a mistake. It's on us. We're accountable. You know, we thought we had something. It just didn't work out for him. It didn't work out for us. You know, we traded him where they think that he could probably do a little good. I mean, how many years does Dak have? You know, and Mike McCarthy is a good coach of developing quarterbacks. I don't think he's a good head coach. He can develop quarterbacks pretty well. Remember, he used to be out in Green Bay.
Yeah,
so where Aaron Rodgers stayed all those times he was there. You know, so I'm looking for San Francisco to possibly pull in second, possibly a wild card team, but I don't think they'll win the division this year. You know, I think the Rams will come in third, and who knows what the hell's going on out there in Arizona with those Cardinals. The little big-head midget, I'm talking about
Kyler Murray,
he'll be back at the helm. They got a new coach out there who was the defensive coordinator for the Eagles,
right.
So I don't know how much that's going to work out. And finally, we're going to talk about the beast of the NFC East. That division, man, I had a hard time thinking about who I thought would be the division winner, but I got to go with those Philadelphia Pigeons, those Eagles.
Oh, wow.
Up and down the line, they're very talented. Yes, they lost several players off of that NFC Championship team. But when I look at the Cowboys, the Giants, and the Redskins, speaking of that slip of the tongue, I'll get with that in a minute, too. Now, talk about Dallas, New York Giants, and Washington Commanders football team, Redskins, whoever they may be. I'm thinking the Eagles are the better team in that division. Jalen Hurts looked good last year. The defense looked pretty good. And I just can't see anyone in that division, you know, taking them down, even though they have not been a repeat winner in that division for quite some time. I'm looking for the Eagles to break that trend. I'm looking for them to be division winners in the NFC East.
Right.
I'm looking for the Cowboys to pull up second. I'm looking for the Giants to pull in a close third. And when talking about Washington, I like what's going on in Washington, changing all offensive coordinators, changing ownership groups. And here's something for you, Brother B, and I'm pretty sure it's been floating around, it's been rumored that they may go back to being the Redskins again.
Yeah, they've got a huge petition signed to get the names back. And even Native Americans are petitioning to have the name come back.
Exactly.
As the Redskins.
And that was a big surprise.
That's a huge surprise.
Because with all this stuff with political being politically correct these days, I was surprised to see that they were the ones even petitioning for them to change the name back to the Redskins.
Exactly. Well, it gave them recognition.
I would like to see it.
It gave them recognition. It made people understand that they are still in existence here in this country. And they honestly felt it's a necessary recognition boost. The other thing, though, I hear is they're moving back to RFK. Magic wants to expand and rebuild RFK and move the team back to D.C.
And I think that would be fantastic because that's where they belong. They belong in D.C. They do not belong in Landover, Maryland, or whatever part of Maryland they were playing in. You know, they are the Washington football team.
Whatever they
are. Their teams belong, whatever they are, they belong in Washington. I think there were some great times when they played in the RFK. I would like to see not only the name return to the Redskins, but the team return back to D.C.
Right, right.
Now I'm saving the best for last, and you know what I'm about to talk about. You already know. I'm going to tell you, it was just, listen, Brother B, you know I'm excited about these boys. You know I'm talking about the high-flying O's. I had the opportunity to come down into Baltimore Friday evening and watch those. Man, let me tell you something. It was so exciting being down at that stadium. Even though I was very disappointed because Baltimore, what is going on with this fan base? I was there and there's just so many empty seats. This is a first place team. This is a team that's the beast of the American League, not only the American League East, but the American League. They have the second best record in baseball. And you guys are not filling up the stadium. Let me tell you something, Brother B. I went to a game up in Philadelphia. Yeah, I said it, Philadelphia. And this is a team that's just a wild card team, and they're filling up those seats up there. Whereas you have I just lost for words because I was shocked at how many empty seats were there. And because I caught the train down there, there are a lot of other people catching the train to go see the Orioles, which means they were coming from either Virginia, Delaware, like myself from Philadelphia, or who knows where. But we were catching the train to come to Baltimore to watch those high-flying O's. And I don't understand why the people in the city are not filling that stadium up because they are a first-place team. I can remember back in the day when the Orioles were hot, super hot, they would fill that stadium up all the time.
Yeah.
They would fill Memorial Stadium. They were filling up Camden Yards. And I'm looking at it right now, I'm like, what is going on? There was a guy there that was sitting behind me, and he was kind of like one of those type of fans that just go visit all stadiums. That's on his bucket list, to visit every stadium in the MLB. And he was saying he was kind of surprised that this stadium was as empty as it was. I'm not saying it was half empty or half full. It's just that there were too many available seats for a team that's in first place.
Well, you got to remember, too,
in the World Series,
it rained in Baltimore last night.
I don't care.
Right.
I'm talking about Friday night when I was there.
Okay.
I'm not talking about the rain. I'm talking about it was a beautiful night in Baltimore. It was nice. It was warm. There was a slight breeze that would come from time to time. And people were not going down to see those high-flying O's, even with the new black uniforms.
Right.
Man, I'm telling you, that was an exciting game. I loved it. I wish I could come down and see some more games because I am a fan of this team.
It didn't rain Friday night when you were there?
It did not rain at all. I had a wonderful time, man. I sat there, ate my peanuts, I drank my beer, and I showered, and you know, and it was great.
Awesome, man.
They pulled the game out in eighth inning.
Yeah, it was a one-run game, right?
Exactly, 5-4. Exciting. You know what? When I come down to see the Orioles play, I'm looking for some good defensive play, and it was kind of lackluster. I'm not saying there were any errors, made anything, but there were no highlight reels for defense. It was just a regular, you know, game. It was a little boring, but the offense was fantastic. Orioles went up early in the game. They fell behind, and then they pulled it out in the eighth inning with a two-run homer. It was great.
Is Cedric Mullins in the starting lineup now?
Not yet. He came in off the bench.
Okay.
You know, he had two plate appearances. And I was hoping to see him in the starting lineup. I think we'll see him back in the starting lineup pretty soon.
Right.
But I'm telling you, Brother B, I'm just a little surprised. I'm a little disappointed to say Baltimore and their fan base for not showing up and supporting those O's. Don't wait till they get to the playoffs. Don't wait till they make it to the World Series. Come and support them now.
I got you, bro.
Do it now. You know? And lastly, in baseball, I'm pretty sure everybody's heard about what happened to Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah.
With the UCL elbow strain, and he's most likely going to have. And I did not know this until recently that he's already had Tommy John surgery. And
right.
He's possibly having another Tommy John surgery for his pitching arm. Now, they're going to shut him down as far as pitching, but they will probably most likely still use him as a DH. And most likely, if he continues to play in the DH role, he's going to win the American League Player of the Year.
Oh, definitely. Definitely.
He's going to win the MVP.
Real quick, man, we've got about 2 minutes. Tell me about the Ravens, man. You skipped over that division.
I'm not talking about those bum birds because everybody was talking about this winning streak they had in the preseason. And then they go in and they listen tight. Listen, they're bum birds to me because they find a way to mess everything
up.
Come
on, man.
I was hoping that, you know, listen, I was kind of hoping, I know it's only preseason, but I was kind of hoping that the undefeated streak continued and they find a way to mess that up. But, you know, preseason, it is what it is. You're talking about a bunch of backups fighting for jobs, so I can't understand. But the one person I did pay attention to that I really liked was Zay Flowers. He looked good out there. I think you guys got a nice young receiver. Hopefully you can hold on to him. Hopefully that young man can stay healthy. I think he's going to do some great things in Baltimore with Lamar Jackson. So, okay. No, I'm not talking about the Ravens just yet. I most likely will in the future.
All right.
And, okay. You know, it's that time of year. And, you know, I got to find a way to talk about those bum birds. But for me, if I'm going to talk about some birds, I'm going to talk about those high-flying O's. That's what I want to talk about.
Okay, so, okay.
My Ravens report will be coming up pretty soon. But right now, it's all about the O's. On that note, Brother B, I am out of here. Peace.
Peace, brother. Thank you, sir. Okay, well, the Petty is done. We've heard a lot from him today. We heard a lot about the boxing, the Orioles. But he didn't want to talk about the Ravens, and I understand why. He understands that the Ravens are going to be a beast. He did not want to concede to that fact. But he will soon because the season is here, and pretty soon there'll be no denying. So, listen, thank you so much for being here with me as well. Thanks to Lindsberg Petway for being with me today. You know, he does a lot on Sundays with his family. He does a lot for his faith, so I really appreciate him taking out the time today and sit down with me. Thanks, Lindsberg. I appreciate you, bro. I got to fly out there and check you out. And also remember, I'd be remiss if I didn't say this to you. Yesterday, thousands of people gathered at the Lincoln Memorial in Washington, D.C. for the 60th. That's right. It's been 60 years since the March on Washington with Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. He did this in 1963, and he spoke about his dream of more than just an equitable America. He wanted everyone to understand that we are all one unit, and hopefully, in his dream, we could live like that. Now, that dream has not been completely realized, but we are closer now than we were then to some degree. I need you guys to remember that on that sweltering August hot day, over 250,000 people gathered at the mall, and it was a mixed crowd. It was not all black. It was definitely a mixed crowd because more than just blacks want that dream realized. So on this Sunday, sit back, think about that. You can YouTube the whole speech, listen to it. But for the most part, contemplate and do nothing today because today is a day of rest and contemplation. But remember, the best thing, and I always say, the best thing about doing nothing is you can quit whenever you want. Wake up tomorrow morning ready to conquer the world, having that energy about you that nothing's going to stop you, and you're going to be the best that you can possibly be. Be well, people. I'm going to leave you with these famous words from the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. Peace.
I have a dream that one day, this nation will rise up and live out the true meaning of its creed. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal.